Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning, Bill Ryder with you. Welcome into the show. And in related news, Los Angeles Clippers, welcome to the darkness. Great to be here. We got a lot planned for you. We're also coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. What is the expression? People that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. What if you're made of glass? Is that an even worse idea? Hashtag yes it is. Uh-oh. Here we go. We'll do that later. We'll let it percolate. We'll let it fester like the hopes and dreams of the seven Clippers fans here in L.A. that just came crashing back to earth yesterday. Do you know who's even more angry that the Sacramento Kings didn't draft Luka Doncic than the Sacramento Kings? The Los Angeles Clippers. I saw a great thing on Twitter yesterday. It wasn't me. Can't remember who it was. Shame on me. I should credit folks when they come up with funny things. But it was basically on Twitter how dumb do you have to be to intentionally schedule a series against Luka Doncic? Pretty dumb. Pretty stupid. You're the Clippers. All right. Sorry, Clippers fans. All seven of you. I'm sorry. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. Sports writer, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Congratulations, Warriors, Knicks, Heat fans for Kawhi Leonard next year. All kinds of good stuff coming up. A lot of people are mad at Shannon Sharp. CAA, the National Football League, Atlanta Falcons, pretty powerful triumvirate. We'll get into that later in the show. We'll, as I promised, talk about Clippers. I'm going to save my new Paul George nickname for you. Hashtag it's awesome. It's amazing. I knew the adult diaper comment was leading to something magical. I just didn't know where it was going. You don't want to miss it this hour. Jake Fisher wrote a really interesting book, Bleacher Report NBA writer, on how tanking shaped the NBA, built to lose. And we'll visit with Jake about the playoffs and about his book and his thought process an hour from now. I gotta give Robert Manfred credit. I feel like I'm sort of past being shocked in my life, right? I once interviewed Bill Clinton at a urinal. I've had LeBron James get really angry at me. I had Chris Paul scream at me for 15 minutes. But I can go on. I've had a lot of bizarre things happen to me in my career. Didn't think I could be shocked. And then the commissioner of Major League Baseball just went and proved he can be even more inept than I thought that he was. It's a pretty stunning achievement. A lot of shots being fired today. A lot of people that could be bum of the year just lining up on a Wednesday. Pew, pew, pew. What is this, a bum of the week carnival game? Yeah, I'll take the big animal because I'm taking all these fools down. Yeah, the big elephant over there. Cool. Thank you. Robert Manfred is a real cool guy. He's real swell. He's groovy. He's groovy, kids. Oh, my God. Baseball's latest attempt to connect We'll get into that later in the show. Buy or sell, bunch of stuff coming up on the program. I'll start here, though. I say this a lot. It's true. Life isn't fair. That's part of the deal. You want it to be right, and I'm a dad. And, you know, one of the things as a father that you grapple with in your own life, in my own life, you come to the conclusion life isn't fair, and it shapes you. And you, by the way, life can also be unfair in ways that are amazing. To the degree that I deserve to have a television job at CBS Sports and a radio show is certainly debatable. Right? It can work both ways. And it certainly plays out in sports. And you want to protect the people you love from that. But the reality is that things can be arbitrary. Things can go the way that you don't deserve. You can do everything the right way. Everything you can be worthy of something that you've spent your lifetime pursuing and not achieve it for reasons that are not your fault. And that is what is happening certainly to the Phoenix Suns. And I won't go so far as to say entirely to Chris Paul, except I think people should be given credit not just for their greatness, but for the ability to overcome the biggest obstacles they throw in front of themselves. And in that respect, Chris Paul and his story of unrealized promise, that is his career, unrealized greatness, isn't something that internally, and I guess because I have a radio show and say what I think externally, I used to enjoy fairly smugly because we've had some terrible interactions. I don't enjoy it now. And I can't pretend to be as sourced on Chris Paul's relationship with the Suns as I was on his interactions with the Clippers when I broke those stories many years ago. But I'll tell you this, and I made the comparison to Jimmy Butler. Chris Paul could have gone, basically anywhere. Chris Paul is the head of the Players Association, has a massive amount of power, and we live in a time, as you know, in the NBA. And now it's trickling, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Hawaii's photos with the shirt off. Fine, Miles Teller, put your shirt back on. It's trickling over to quarterbacks and in the National Football League. Stars have power. And I know that there was a pull for Chris Paul to be in Phoenix in part because it's close to his family in Los Angeles, and I can relate to that. And again, I think one of the paradoxes of Chris Paul, as I understand it, as I've reported it, and I've experienced the professional side, is professionally not always a likable person. And I'm told, not really my forte, not what I really care about, not what we talk about, but as a human being, I think, as I understand it, a really good guy. And that doesn't always correlate. My point is he's a complicated character like a lot of us are. And you can hate your boss, right, for reasons that are legitimate. Doesn't mean he's a bad father or a bad husband or a bad best friend. Or people are complicated. And Chris Paul was not an easy person to get along with. And that he went to the Suns and he found a place that fit his personality and or that he adjusted it and brought out the best in this young team, I think speaks to Chris Paul and being able to be a better version of himself or put himself in a place like Jimmy Butler with the Heat, where his version of himself is better just because of the circumstances. And as a result of Chris Paul's arrival, and everywhere Chris Paul's gone, they've been flashing these stats at TNT. Everywhere he'd gone, right? You go through his career, the year before he arrived, the year he arrived, winning percentages, they jump markedly, including, of course, Phoenix this year. And I'll pat myself on the back that I can be really hard on the people that I think I need to be hard on, and I enjoy, probably because I enjoy it. Like, I think Chris Paul's an enormous phony, and I like talking about it. I also think he's a massive talent worthy of greatness because of that talent, the work ethic behind it, and I'm cool with that, too. For me, both things can be true and are true. And I knew, and I was, to be fair, told, right, sort of pointed by people I trust in the NBA, that this was going to be an amazing Phoenix Suns team. And selfishly, right, not because I'm some sort of great guy who's celebrating Chris Paul turnaround, I like to be right. The show's called Righter Than You. I'm happy to admit when I'm wrong. I like to be right. And I pride myself, especially on the NBA, on being right a lot more often than most people that are out there doing this for a living. Luck, reporting, I don't know. 10-year sample size, it is what it is, and it's true. And I have been telling you the Suns were a great team. I've been needling my colleagues who come on the show graciously that the Suns were going to be a top 4 team, and people weren't buying what I was selling. But I was buying what Chris Paul brought to that team. The Suns are, at a minimum, the second-best team in the National Basketball Association's Western Conference. They are. The end. That was true before. Now, if we've seen the Clippers be the Clippers, I think you probably know it's true. Or you should if you're watching these games. But life isn't fair. And you don't always get what you deserve. For a multitude of reasons, for so many reasons, I wanted the Warriors to win that first play-in game. In part because, ironically, I think it would have been more fair to the Phoenix Suns. Maybe not to the Los Angeles Lakers, But the real, you know, LeBron's, whoever did this play-in should be fired. The real team that has been punished by the play-in tournament, the only team that's been punished, it's not the Warriors, beat the Grizzlies. It's the Phoenix Suns. And that was going to be true with a healthy Chris Paul. 100% Chris Paul, this baby was going to be a battle. But people were going to see what I've seen this year. People that don't watch Suns games, people that aren't in Phoenix. DeAndre Ayton didn't have, and I saw it from so many people and I got frustrated from game one. DeAndre Ayton's not going to have that kind of game again. Oh, yeah, it's a great call. Unless that's the player that he's become in Chris Paul's arrival and you don't know what you're talking about. DeAndre Ayton's a really good player. And this is not me, but I've been saying it on the radio. Someone that is 100% as it relates to the information they've given me over the years told me DeAndre Ayton is going to thrive for two very simple reasons. Three reasons. He's further in his career, and he's in a sort of a breakout time when guys do that. Chris Paul is going to take massive pressure off of him publicly, if not privately, because now DeAndre Ayton becomes the third. When you're the third most important guy, by the way, you can also be the fifth most important guy on any given night. When you're the second most important guy, Anthony Davis, you get blamed, period. You're blamed if things go badly. Totally different deal. And the third thing was that he was going to get easy buckets in the pick and roll from Chris Paul. He was going to have all kinds of opportunities. The pressure and the need to double-team guys like either Devin Booker or get up on Chris Paul was going to create even easier looks for him. And the chaos created by the offense from the Suns, it was explained to me, was just going to mean it would be easier for him to rebound. And so getting some touches, getting his hand on the ball, getting some easy buckets was going to instill this dude with some confidence. And you've seen it. You've seen that Devin Booker is a breakout superstar, except he broke out a long time ago. Nobody was paying attention, or at least not enough, because you know what? He didn't have Chris Paul. Monty Williams is the right fit for that team. And the team we saw in the bubble last year play great. Was at least the second best team in the Western Conference. I said three yesterday. I lied to you because the Clippers snuck in there. There are four teams that are in the top 10 in offense and defense over the regular season, which I say again and again and again because I think it's important and instructive for your gambling and just for your knowledge, has been historically an absolute marker of who's going to win an NBA championship. And by the way, you look at some of those Cleveland Cavaliers teams with LeBron. You look at the Warriors teams that didn't win. There's a lot of reasons they didn't win. They always fell out of the top 10 in one of those categories. Usually it was defense. Suns do both. But you can't win an NBA championship if your best player can't play. And I don't know what it is with Chris Paul. And I say the word karma with no pleasure. I don't. I don't know if it's bad luck. I don't know if it's karma. I don't know if Chris Paul, as a smaller guard who has pushed himself beyond the age where you're supposed to be able to be durable, which is 32, but it feels like time in space as it relates to professional athletes, that's all been bent and warped, right? But still, maybe he just goes so hardcore in the regular season that his body gives out. I don't know why, but I've seen this movie before and I know how it ends. It is a love story that ends as a horror film for anyone rooting for a Chris Paul story. And it sucks and it doesn't feel fair, but it is what it is. 7 minutes in the second half, and that was a mercy because the guy, at least right now, with that shoulder can't play, can't move, can't accelerate, can't handle the ball, can't shoot, can't be Chris Paul. And the Suns cannot win the series without him. And by the way, they could have won that game last night. They had a chance to win that game last night. And what happened is what's going to happen if you don't have Chris Paul. And by the way, might still happen if you have Chris Paul. But here's what's going to happen, certainly without him, in Suns versus Lakers, which should be a Western Conference Finals showdown, or maybe a semifinals that decides who comes out of the West. Here's what's going to happen. Two things are going to happen. One, LeBron James is going to be great. Regardless of the rest of his night, he's going to put pressure on you and often win the game. And you saw that. The guy had a fadeaway jumper that was insane and a three-point shot where AD kind of set a pick on the left side in the corner, but LeBron was basically inclined at an angle that was utterly and totally ridiculous. Ridiculous. And the second thing that's going to happen is that you're going to have trouble scoring and counterpunching there because it feels different. And if you were watching the game, you felt that. It felt different. For me, it's when the 3 minute mark rolls over to under 3 minutes. And when it says two and change on the clock, you can feel the energy shift. You can feel it in your living room. And I promise you, back in the day, and they're coming back where you can go to these games, you certainly feel it, 100% feel it in person. And the players felt it. And there were some bad shots out there. Devin Booker couldn't score. And some of the guys around him who had really, really big games throughout that. It was a battle. I mean, the Suns got down and came back, couldn't get it done. Jay Crowder's a tough, tough dude, but he's not the star of the game. Cameron Payne hit some huge shots, but not at the end, and Forrest one in particular. You have to have Chris Paul. You have to have your closer. You have to have Devin Booker be the most talented guy on the Suns who's not the most important. You have to have DeAndre Ayton be on the floor in a situation where the limelight's not on him, and therefore he can handle the weight of the moment if the moment shifts to him. Without Chris Paul, the Suns can't win this series. And that's not fair. The Suns did everything right. They brought in the right guy. Chris Paul did everything right. And one of the most mercurial personalities and remarkable talents at the point guard position in the history of the NBA is not going to get an NBA championship in his career, at least not one where he's a focal point. Maybe he'll be a hanger-on with LeBron team at some point, but not one that deep down he knows he earned, because life's unfair, man. And that's the way it goes sometimes, and that totally sucks. And by the way, in the NBA, it's unfair for a lot of people. Going back a generation, a couple generations. I mean, you can ask, they don't exist anymore, but Supersonics fans, you can ask Utah fans, you can ask, I mean, just keep going. Ask Kings fans about those Lakers teams and the officiating. Ask a bunch of guys about LeBron and the Warriors. Life's not fair. And that's the story. Phoenix Suns are going to lose this series probably, unless there's a miraculous healing by Chris Paul. And by the way, if Chris Paul were healthy, I think the Suns win, but I think it's really, really close. And it's probably a Lakers by a little bit. It's probably my wishful thinking because I want interesting things to happen to interesting people. Don't have to like them. You know, worthiness is not the same thing as being a good person. It's something I've never, and it's always been something that annoyed me. When I worked at newspapers, and I was a pretty driven, ambitious, hardworking guy. Now, I don't know if I was talented, but I was pretty hardworking. And I would go to a new newspaper, and I worked at some pretty good ones, and people would say, man, this guy's an amazing writer. This gal's an amazing writer. Like, oh, really? And I'd read their work. It was terrible. Now, it just turned out that, Johnny was just a cool guy who drank beer. Johnny's a great guy. And I saw him play with his kids at the playground, too. That's sweet. Yeah, his daughter's a sweetie, but he sucks at his job. So, like, can we not conflate the two? They're not related. They're not connected. I can separate those things. And I can root for Chris Paul, the player, because with the Suns, that was a beautiful thing and an incredible level of basketball in a market that deserves some success with a group of young guys who bought into something that's hard to take from Chris Paul and a leader in Chris Paul who either found the right place for his very unique style of leadership, and I say that with a lot of sarcasm, or adjusted. I don't care what it is. It worked. Scoreboard. And it's not going to come to fruition because the guy is hurt again. And I got nothing to tell you other than that really, really sucks. 855-212-4CBS. And give the Lakers credit. Hell of a basketball team, right? It would feel different, too, if the Suns came up short in the situation in a conference finals, but at least got to taste a little bit of the glory that they've earned, right? More painful to get that close. But I think a journey at a minimum that they got a little further down the road on because they'd earned it. They're going out in the first round, man, if Chris Paul does not heal. Let's talk some NFL. And I've been here, dude. I've been here at Fox Sports 1 when I worked there. And I, you know, you got to be careful the temptation to drink from the chalice of ambition, man. Not to be over too highfalutin, but Shannon Sharp, don't get caught up in that need to be the guy. Don't get caught up in those producers telling you to do something you shouldn't do. You better look out for yourself. There's trouble brewing. Big mistake. Big mistake. Maybe legal mistake. We'll get into Shannon Sharp with an all-time media fumble next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
The most interesting story in the NFL right now outside of... By the way, let me just say this about Aaron Rodgers. I want to talk about Julio Jones, but getting tricked into being candid. But let me say this about Aaron Rodgers. And I will say this. I think Aaron Rodgers thinks he's a master media manipulator. I think he's starting to jump the shark there, which is problematic. It's interesting when neither of the emperors have clothes on and they're battling each other, right? Like, no one's going to tell either of these guys. Okay. Gutekunst versus Rodgers. What is this, Dumb and Dumber 4? It's where we're sort of trending toward. But we'll say this. Aaron Rodgers looks really happy. Like, he actually looks just like, and I would be a little worried if you're the Packers that Aaron Rodgers with his fiance and hanging out with Miles Teller. God, that guy is, I used to like that guy. 2 days, and I'm just like, oh, that's who you are. Got it. Cool. He looks pretty happy. Aaron Rodgers looks pretty joyous in these photos and videos. Be careful. He might actually, like, have started pretending he was going to retire and might decide he just really likes retirement. All right. Other than that, the biggest story in the NFL right now is Julio Jones and what's going to happen with the Falcons. Advanced in his years for a wide receiver at, what, age 32? But talented. And in the right place, in the right offense, with the right opportunity, not just an opportunity for him to have a second, maybe more successful part of his career, but a huge boost for a team like the Patriots, and that certainly wouldn't be the only one. There's a lot of teams that would thrive with him, but he's got to be available, and the price has to be right. Well, one way to drive the price down is to have a national television show call Julio Jones, put him on speakerphone, and have Julio Jones say he's out of there. Oh, and by the way, he's not going to Dallas. Let's just like cut out some of the competition. And that's what happened with Shannon Sharp on Undisputed at my former employer, Fox Sports 1. And before I tell this story and give you some insight on FS1, let me say this. The story I'm about to tell does not speak to every person who works at FS1. And I am incredibly appreciative. Eric Shanks and a lot of the folks, Rick Jaffe, who's no longer there, Scott Ackerson retired, changed my life, changed my career. Great place. But I can say this, as speculation mounts that Julio did not know he was on national TV until the end of the interview, a few things struck me. One, it's against the law to record someone in California without their permission. In some places, I've worked in one- and two-party consent states. And as a reporter who used to tape record people, I used to occasionally, if I knew I was going to be in an airplane, like traveling, if I was in a state that was a one-party consent state when I worked in California, I would do a longer layover and make my phone calls so I could tape record people because people lie. I'm telling, like, you get, I don't know, somebody on the phone and you get them to say something, they'll lie if they get in trouble and say they didn't say it. It's just good to have it. You can't break the law. That's just the way that it works. And Shannon Sharp may not have known that, but his producers need to know that. And secondly, it's just incredibly bad form, and this is why. CAA, which is a really powerful agency, is real mad. The NFL is real mad. The Falcons are incredibly angry. And Pro Football Talk went through this today in a really smart way, as Florio and the guys and the gals over there tend to do. But in summation, if a bunch of offers come in for Julio Jones and there's a reasonable bidding war and whatever his market value should have been, that's what the Falcons get when they move him. It'll be problematic still. It won't be no harm, no foul, but it'll be a little harm, but that doesn't really matter. But if the price gets driven down because people realize, A, he's going to be traded, leverage disappears, and B, he's going to be particular about where he's going to go and not go. For example, Dallas Cowboys aren't going to be making an aggressive bid. That's a huge problem for FS1. And I don't know if Shannon, I'd love someone that covers the media to report this. If Shannon Sharp's deal is up in the next 6 months or 9 months, it would explain a lot. Because when people's contracts are up, it's how all of us in media operate. You know, you either really want to make sure you get renewed, or I would imagine in Shannon Sharp's case, you want to make sure you get paid a bunch of money. I don't know what he's making, but Skip Bayless reportedly makes $6 to $8 million a year. If Shannon's making, and I'm just making these numbers up, 1.2, which is what colleagues of his at his level have made there, he might want 4. This is a way to do it, and it's an overreach. And there is pressure when you're in places, but especially in LA, to step up and do things you shouldn't do. Don't underestimate what it's like to have makeup artists and haircut people and people bringing you food and producers to get this little bubble and to make mistakes. I saw it from so many colleagues. I once, when I was covering the NBA, and I will never pretend to be something I'm not. I am incredibly connected in the NBA, but I do not break news in the National Basketball Association. And I'll be totally upfront with you. 12 years ago, when I was breaking into the NBA and writing about it and got to know Adrian Wojnarowski, it occurred to me pretty early on I wasn't going to be able to break news on Woj. I remember once, I don't really care if Adrian would want me to tell this story or not. He probably wouldn't. I don't care. I went to meet an agent at CAA. He was a pretty big-time guy. It was hard to get in with, and it just hard to get a meeting with. And we hung out for an hour and a half. We had coffee. Went extremely well. I was really impressed with myself. I was patting myself on the back. I was like, I'm crushing this. The guy gave me all of his phone numbers. Hooked me. Whatever. It was a great professional moment. I was busting my ass. And if you've ever been, you've probably never been to CAA, but it's this huge building that looks like the Death Star. It's ridiculous. You walk in, it's all glass. The assistants are trained to be politely rude, right? They're polite, but they're also telling you are an idiot and you need to lose some weight with their eyes. And I got the message, kids. I got it, young people. And you go out the back, right? You go down this escalator, out the back. There's all these fancy restaurants and a coffee shop. This agent and I are at the coffee shop for an hour and a half. Shake his hand. He's next to me. I get up. I throw the coffee away. He goes a separate way. I walk up a staircase. That probably took me 30 seconds. I go up an escalator. That probably took me 30 seconds. I walk to the front door to go to the valet, and my little phone goes, you know, like little, I'm trying to do a vibrate sound. There we go. Hit the microphone. And I look down, and it's Adrian Wojnarowski, who texts me, "Hey, Bill, hope you're well." Heard that you just had a nice conversation with fill in the blank. He was very impressed by you. Good work. Now, Adrian's a good guy to the people he's a good guy to, and he's always been good to me, and I consider him a professional friend. But it was also a message. I'm everywhere. It was Adrian Wojnarowski's message, I'm everywhere. And even before that, I made the decision, I actually would call sources. Probably shouldn't say this. I don't want people to use this. But I would call people and just be like, look, I'm on the radio. I talk on TV. I just want to know what I'm talking about. I will never ask you to give me something that Adrian's trying to, like, I get it. But can I be your next phone call? Can you just give me what you think it means? And you'd be surprised how much that actually works. So many people in the NBA space are trying to prove they're a GM or they're trying to prove they're Adrian Wojnarowski, that if you go the other way, it has some value, at least for me. I'm not a famous NBA person, but around the NBA, I think the people that know that I know what I'm talking about, and that's the reason. I say all that to say this. When I worked at FS1 as the NBA guy, they put a lot of pressure on me to break news, and I was really honest. Like, I'm not going to do that, but I can be insightful on the air. I can say things, I can give you perspectives on the air that are, if I say it's sourced, it will be. And Adrian, of course, breaking story after story after story, and there were producers, a couple in particular, who came to me. I'll never forget one of the conversations, say, hey, can you confirm this? It was like a wink, wink, just pretend. But they never said it until this time. I'm like, no, I can't. And they would get mad. There would be like this sort of, you know, we need people that can do this. I'm like, I understand. I can't confirm it. I'm not breaking the story, but if you give me 15 minutes, I'll tell you what it means, right? Because I literally had this deal with sources. And I got called into a room, and I had important people to FS1 tell me some big story came down. It wasn't like LeBron's leaving, but it was something like that. I can't remember. And they said, we need you to confirm it right now. Literally, Adrian had probably tweeted 10 seconds earlier. I'm like, look, I can't, but I'll get some insight. In an hour, it won't matter because everyone will confirm it. Like, that was my deal with sources. I'm not going to ask you to confirm it, but let's just tell me what it means. I'll go based on the fact that, well, just tell me what it means. Even the same people that could confirm it, that was the deal. And they told me, basically, you need to confirm it. I don't have it. Too bad. Say you've confirmed it anyway. No. Well, I don't know how much airtime you're going to get. That's like for someone like me that has a family that moved to LA, that isn't famous, that didn't play sports, that's not a great professional spot to be in. And I don't know if it's character or the journalistic training in me or just the assumption. I did, by the way, I assumed I was going to fail when I moved to LA. Lori and I were like, let's go, it'll be fun. I hate the person I work for in Kansas City. Let's just like have a different experience. And then when it all blows up, I'll go back to the Midwest. How it's still ticking, I don't know. But I told those guys politely to go to hell. Didn't get fired. Got to stay there. But I can understand. Is that what's happening to Shannon Sharpe? No idea. But I'm telling you, there's a culture there of pressure and pressuring people and producers who walk around. I don't mean the lead producers. The lead producer of that show is a great guy and really good at his job who's going to take all the flack. But the people you deal with in the moments, right, in the moments will tell you and ask you to do things you shouldn't do. And it's easy to get caught up in that or to feel pressure, even if you're Shannon Sharpe. Doesn't make it okay. But the NFL... not turned on its axis. But what happens to Julio Jones and whether his market is vastly changed, whether the Patriots get this guy for a Snapple instead of a bunch of draft picks, literally might be because one of these same idiots pressured someone who's better than they are what they do for a living to do something they shouldn't have done. And that's sometimes the way the world works behind the scenes. I know this is true, but I can't just give examples like this one. You'd be shocked how much sports history turns not on greatness, but on the opposite of it in people you never see. I hope Julio Jones doesn't sue. I hope they don't file a criminal complaint. I hope he was in on it. But this is a huge, huge problem. And that's it. That's my story. I don't think I've ever told that story in its entirety. I've never told the Wold story. God, what a baller that guy is. Really impressive. I could find that. I bet I had the text number on my phone. It was 90 seconds max from the moment I said goodbye to this agent to the moment I got to it was just like, come on. Come on. And the crazy thing is that guy gave me a ton of info. But I'm sure at Woj's, like, I'm sure Woj approved it. And if Woj hears this, he'll probably cut me off. And Adrian, I think you're great. I think you're talented. You've been gracious to me. I don't care, man. You do you and I'll do me. And that's the way the job works. I think he's great at what he does. But that guy is an assassin. He's like bogus. Like, he might look mild-mannered. He will take you out of the kneecaps if you don't follow the code. The other thing I like about Woj and about Bogus, there's a code, right? Just Bogus, just follow the code.
I can't speak to you. You broke the code.
Oh, I did. I did.
Yeah. Moach just texted me. No more Ryder.
No more Ryder. He's cut off. Oh, that's a Woj bomb. It's a Woj bomb. That's a big Woj bomb. I'm really I know you're gonna put in the update, Bogish, and I've been holding it in. I am very excited about the Clipper segment I'm gonna do next. I'm really looking forward to it. I really am. The Clippers and I have not had a wonderful relationship over the years. And I'm really enjoying their struggles. I'm just telling you right now, I am enjoying their struggles. I came up with a nickname, and I need you to tell me, Andrew, bye. I already texted DiBenedetto, and he gave me a bye. You can get the buy or sell ready if you want, Tommy, because
Oh, it's ready.
It's ready? Okay. So I know that he's called himself Playoff P, right? I know that's a thing. And I've been making this joke that feels a little on the edge that I don't know why that Paul George wears adult diapers in the playoffs. And I was trying to figure out where that came from. And then I realized that Playoff P's actual playoff name. And by the way, those of you that didn't see the game can't just look at the box score. There was a 24-second. There was a clock violation. That was Paul George basically choking. There was a terrible shot at the end. And really the story of the Clippers was a story of no defense. If you were just to look at the box score and not watch the game. And by the way, I had to do something. I mean, I was going back and forth between the two. I mean, it's hard to follow two games at one time. But if you look at points in the paint, fast break points, if you look at how Kawhi Leonard and Paul George played in a vacuum, it was a great offensive outing for the Clippers. It was defensively where they're awful. I don't have the box score up in front of me, but I can do this basically off memory. I'm pretty sure that the Mavericks shot like 58% from the field, 52 or 53% from the three-point line. All right. So here, Bogish, all that buildup, are you ready for Playoff P's actual nickname in the playoffs? He actually gave us half the nickname. Playoff P is pants.
Bye.
Woe just told me to sell, but I'm going to buy on Playoff P in his pants.
Bye.
Playoff P's his pants. I mean...
I mean...
By the way, I like Paul George. Like, on a personal level, and I've hung out with him. I like him. I'm just gonna, I don't think I'll ever hang out with him again. and if I do,
bridges today.
Yeah, if I do, I'm gonna bring, you know, some paper towels probably. But I'm just saying, like, it feels
Bye.
Like
it's
too much.
Some wee wee pads, like he's a dog.
I don't wanna judge people. I mean, you know, maybe he has to hydrate, right? Like I got it. It's hard to find a restroom in certain towns or playoff venues, perhaps.
Maybe he's overhydrating and he can't help himself.
He's over. Yeah, he's definitely overhydrating. Yep. Playoff piece of pants. I don't understand why the Clippers don't like me. I don't. You go to the tape, it doesn't add up.
It's a mystery.
It's such a mystery. Such a mystery. What else is going on out there?
Well, actually, we're going to begin with the Clippers. One of us, maybe me, had them reaching the conference final. They might not even see round two now, down 0-2 to the Mavericks after another loss at Staples last night, 127-121. I'm not really sure what Ty Lue is trying to say here.
You come in on an opposing team's floor and you play, there's no pressure on you to make shots because you're supposed to, you know, you just try to come in and steal a game or steal two games, but now they got to go home and try to keep up the same shooting. So it's easy to come on a roll and do that when there's no pressure on you. So we'll see you in game three.
So it's easy for the Mavs to win twice in his building, but it'll be harder for the Mavs to be good in Dallas where the
pressure.
Mavs fans are.
That is a really, maybe he's saying in code that there are restrooms closer to the floor. Maybe that's.
Well, it's drier. Maybe he assumes that Texas heat will dry out Paul.
The evaporation effect. We're going to practice outside because Playoff P needs it. Let's go. We're a team. Too much?
They might, as you said, want to play some defense as well. Luka Doncic, 39 points last night, 28 for Tim Hardaway Jr. Game 3 in Dallas is on Friday. The Lakers back in business for the morning after taking Game 2 in Phoenix, 109-102. A 15-point third-quarter lead disappeared, so LeBron and Anthony Davis hit big threes late. It also helped that Chris Paul finished the game on the bench because of his right shoulder. Paul just 6 points, 5 assists in 23 minutes. And the Nets smoked the Celtics, 130-108 for a 2-0 lead. Joe Harris, a a playoff career-high 25 points. Durant and Harden combined for 46. And shunned by MVP voters, Julius Randle must settle for most improved player. Chris Bosh is idol-setting career highs for points, rebounds, assists, and three-point shooting. On playoff ice, the Hurricanes and Predators going past regulation for the third consecutive game.
As she rips one right on Saros, deflected by Saros. Still there, he scores! The captain ends it in overtime, and he's mobbed by his teammates, and this building's going crazy!
Scalco on Hurricanes Radio, Jordan Stahl getting Carolina a 3-2 win and a 3-2 series lead. The Leafs, 4-0 winners in Montreal for a 3-1 edge there. The NFL will have 29 of 32 teams reporting to training camp on the same day, Tuesday, July 27th. There will also be league-wide practices on the 31st to celebrate camp's opening, and teams can host fans again in accordance with local guidelines. Baseball last night, the Royals snapped the Rays' 11-game win streak 2-1. The Dodger win streak hit 8-9-2 in Houston. The Giants an 8-0 win in Arizona. The Padres beat the Brewers 7-1, and the Reds got by the Nats 2-1. And from the WNBA, the Storm gave the Sun their first loss of the year, 90-87 in OT. Sue Bird had 21. Bill, back to you.
Mr. Bogus, thank you. And by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, with Mr. Randle rightfully winning that award, I went Randle on my ballot. I went my official ballot. I went Randle 1, MPJ 2, and Mr. Bridges at the 3 spot. So I was definitely down. And I will admit to you, Bogish, and I heard that the judgment in your voice, and it's hard to turn away from someone with the historical level of greatness and consistency that Julius Randle has achieved, but I did not put him on my MVP ballot. And I don't have a Hall of Fame ballot, so it was tough.
Well, we know. Julius knows all those who left him off, and he's coming for all of you individually, so watch your back.
One at a time. Maybe I'll get some adult diapers. He is Andrew Bogish. That joke's never going away. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. Paul George, Chris Paul, and Bill Ryder walk into a bar, and then my story ends. I mean, that's basically how that goes. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. All right. Let's talk some Clippers, and we might even have a special conversation with Ty Lue. Next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
What a letdown. So one of the best bets you can make in the NBA is the better team down 1-0 cover in game 2. Normally that team is at home, right? Now it was reversed with Lakers Suns, but sort of insignificant where it was because of LeBron. And that's why, and I haven't made the bet yet, but I'm almost certainly going to bet on the Jazz tonight against Memphis, -8.5. The only reason I'm kind of holding up is because if you dive into the Grizzlies, they're the sixth best defensive rated team in the regular season. But a lot of what they do defensively is not great. What they do really well is they turn the ball over. They're great at turning the ball over. And Utah, I think interestingly, as the best team in the NBA by record, was 18th. Right, so not even middling in turnovers in terms of how many they allowed, which I think is significant. But I'm almost certainly going to bet on Utah. Bet on the Lakers, like these are the game. You know, the Nets didn't obviously the Nets didn't lose, but had they lost, the Celtics would have been a sure thing. And I actually bet on the Bucks in the same way to cover, because even though they didn't lose to the Heat in Game 1 in overtime, people acted like they did in their reactions to the Bucks. The exception was. The Clippers, because they're not the better team. Didn't bet on it. Didn't even think about it, to be honest. Should have been on the Mavs. And there's a few takeaways. And one is, like, let's start here. Luka Doncic, and you know this, is a machine. And again, just on the old I always get stuff right thing, which isn't entirely true. But it was on Jim Rome probably 2 years ago where I said, people freaked out. People always freak out when I fill in for Jim. But people really freaked out that Luka was going to win multiple MVPs. You're an idiot. I'm aware of what that means. I know that that makes you not just a Hall of Famer, but a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's just that good. And Tim Hardaway Jr. played an incredible game. Don't get me wrong. But my main takeaway from watching both those games is that Luka doesn't have the same level of support as any other team that's going to make it to the second round of the playoffs. And there's two reasons for that he's going to make it. One is because he's Luka Doncic, and two is because they're playing the Clippers and playoff penis pants, who is just the new name. It is what it is. And even Kawhi. Kawhi had 30 in the first half, right? So you just, like, you didn't watch the game. You're watching the Lakers game. You're hanging out with your kids. You're playing, you're drinking with the boys, whatever. You didn't see it. Got it. I get it. Oh, wow. Kawhi had 41. They lost. Yeah, but he had 30 in the first half and kind of just didn't get it done. As a story of defense, the Clippers didn't have any. And Ty Lue's always been a question mark, and I was going to go off on Ty Lue, but I don't know why. Like, this is cool, right? Like, I can praise people I don't like, you know, that are critical of me, like Chris Paul, and Ty Lue can be a fan of the show, even though I'm pretty hard on him. He's on the show. Ty Lue. Ty, before we get started, just need to appreciate the time, head coach of the Clippers. I don't have a great relationship with the PR staff there because one of them is a coward. And I'm just curious if they're aware that you're on the radio show today.
I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. That's fine. I mean, I wouldn't check on those guys either. Just one in particular. He's really bad at his job. So what was your game plan as that game started to get away from yesterday?
I don't know.
Okay, well, what did you tell the guys?
I don't know.
What's your plan for the game tonight?
I don't know.
Does Paul George wear an adult diaper?
I don't know.
Would you be surprised if he wore one?
I don't know.
Are you a good coach at the NBA level?
I don't know.
Do you know what you're doing?
I don't know.
Will there ever be a battle of LA in the playoffs?
I don't know.
Does LeBron still talk to you?
No, not really.
Oh, that got me. All right, thank you. Thank you, Ty Lue, everybody. Thank you for being on the show. Kawhi's gone, man. I mean, you never know. Kawhi's a unique cat, but man, I texted a buddy, Warriors Knicks. Just first instinct. The smart money out there, and I haven't asked anybody around the league. So this is just me shooting the breeze. This is not something I'm informed on. It's hard to be informed on. That's the other thing. If someone tells you they're informed on Kawhi, they're probably a liar because I don't even think Kawhi's handlers know what he's thinking half the time. The Miami Heat are the favorite. If they lose this series, it's hard to see him sticking around. And what an utter and total debacle. And it's interesting because I don't think it's a referendum on Kawhi Leonard. I don't. I mean, the guy's been a two-time finals MVP. He's a multi-time champion. He got it done in Toronto. Again, like Chris Paul, like Jimmy Butler, unique personalities. Just the best player on a team is expected to be the leader of the team. That doesn't always go that way. Unique personalities need to be in the perfect spot for them. I've never discussed this, but I think it's possible Tim Duncan, as great as he was, would not have had the career he had somewhere else because his shyness, his desire not to talk, his unique personality, his not inability, but maybe the different ways that he connects with people, it all was the perfect fit in San Antonio. And he sort of was explained when he said that Greg Popovich went to his island and met his family. I mean, you have to be in the right place, and Kawhi may not be there. He'll find a spot. This is a referendum, this Clippers team, on Paul George and on Ty Lue. And they're both coming up short. And I said this. I made fun of Ty Lue a lot when he was in Cleveland. And I wouldn't have hired him as a head coach, but I don't think it was an unreasonable thing for teams to compete to do. But there's a LeBron factor. Ty Lue's not that different than David Blatt, only they were able to get one, right, when Ty Lue was there. If this Clippers team can't win this series, it's a Ty Lue problem and a Paul George problem. I don't want to hear how good Paul George was offensively in that game. Not down the stretch and not defensively. I mean, and Ty Lue, can you make a quick adjustment? When Luka Doncic is saying to Patrick Beverley, you're too small, and they keep switching over to Patrick Beverley, and then Doncic just backs him down and blows past him, keep Paul George on him. All right, that's it. Thank you to Ty Lue for joining. He's a courageous man. It's hard to come into a show that makes fun of you. 855-212-4CBS. Let's talk to Jake Fisher. Wrote the book Built to Lose on tanking, how it shaped the NBA. Next, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
We're talking in the first hour about how individuals and events, things you can't always see, people you can't always see, will shape the leagues, the sports you watch, you root for, the history of these games we talk about. And great new book out on this focused on the NBA. Jake Fisher, who I didn't know was a Brooklyn-based journalist until just now. I lived in Brooklyn for 2 years and loved it. Mostly covers the NBA over at Bleacher Report. He's written for everybody. And his book, it's excellent, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever, is out now. And he joins me now on the show. Jake, what's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
Love it. Where I know Brooklyn's a big, for people that don't know, Brooklyn would be the, like, fourth or fifth biggest city in America. I was in Park Slope, with all the other dads. Where are you at?
I'm in Williamsburg right now looking out at the Manhattan skyline. It's not too shabby.
So what this means for folks that don't have New York experience is that Jake is cool, and we all know I'm not cool. That's where the cool kids hang out. Williamsburg's awesome. It is awesome. So it's a real. I love the concept. I love the idea. How did you decide that this was – because obviously doing a first book is a massive undertaking. It's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's daunting. Why was this the thing you wanted to tackle the first time you decided to write 80 or 100,000 words on something?
Yeah, I mean, you got the word count pretty close. I started covering the league for Slam and for Liberty Ballers, the Sixers blog at SB Nation in 2013, right when Sam Hinkie took over Philly. And people forget, you know, it wasn't just Sam that really started tanking around that time. When he traded Drew Holiday to New Orleans, it was the same night, that 2013 draft, that the Celtics traded KG and Paul Pierce and started that whole rebuild. And Rob Hedigan was in Orlando moving on from Dwight Howard, and Ryan McDonough came to Phoenix. So I went to school in Boston, too, and I was moonlighting as an NBA reporter for Slam, and I'd go into TD Garden. Whenever those teams run by these analytical-minded executives came into town, it felt like I was kind of in the eye of the hurricane and like the Super Bowl of tanking, if you will. So this book over the years, it just kind of is a culmination of all the early reporting I got to do to start my career and the people I've overlapped with around the league.
I love that. Jake Fisher here on the show. Jake L. Fisher, Fisher with a C on Twitter, Built to Lose is the book. So let's dive into some of those teams, Jake. And I know that the Sixers history and story is still playing out, and it'll be interesting to see how this postseason goes for that organization and that team, and now Doc Rivers is the head coach. But Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are the product of that that Hinkie approach back, God, that seems like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Would you, at this point, based on the book, based on your conversations, your reporting, your expertise, how would you evaluate the process and its success level given where we are now?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that it's been 5 years since Hinkie resigned, and it's been longer since he's been out of office than he actually ran the team. I think what you said is really all that really factors into it, right? They have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and they're the number one team in the East, and by all accounts have the easiest path to the finals. And Hinkie's strategy was, in my opinion, and you're right, I talked to over 300 people from this book, players, agents, executives, coaches. From what I've gathered, I mean, I don't really think his plan was to intentionally lose for 3, 4, 5 years. I really think that the goal was just to acquire as many darts at the dartboard, knowing that these superstars would ultimately take you into championship contention. And that's what's happening with the Lakers and Phoenix and Utah and Milwaukee and Brooklyn. It's across the league. And I think you can throw it in his face that Michael Carter-Williams and Nerlens Noel or Jahlil Okafor didn't work out, but yeah, he never had the hubris, I believe, that all of his picks were going to hit. And that's why he wanted to risk and gamble for injured guys upside like Embiid and trade down in the draft and get future assets to really prop this thing up for a long time. They didn't want to be a one-and-done title contender. They wanted to create a perennial threat to win the championship, and I think we're just seeing the beginning of it now.
Talking to Jake Fisher here on the show. Jake, the Boston example you cited, I find to be utterly fascinating, in part because, and you never know how chaos theory is going to affect things, and just you can act with the best of intentions and not get the results, really the best of moves and not get the results that you want. But that said, it certainly looks conceivable that post that trade that you referenced when Boston and the Nets, when the Nets were still in Jersey, basically swap places they thought and what their teams are going to look like. It certainly looks like the Nets could win an NBA championship post that trade before the Celtics. Do you evaluate Danny Ainge's moves and that trade in a different light than most of us have over the last few years, given the fact that there hasn't been a championship?
I think the moves in that trade still ring as very triumphant, successful, being that the picks they got from Brooklyn turned directly into Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, you know, they got Al Horford from there in free agency and Gordon Hayward, and they trade for Kyrie Irving and, like, made the conference finals multiple times. They probably rebuilt this thing better than anybody, quicker than anybody, but it's the moves afterwards that I think have had them, you know, tail spinning down the Eastern Conference here, which is something that came up a lot in the book. Like, as much as tanking is about getting these superstars who will lead you to the title – the challenge from there, it's pretty easy to build a bad team and then draft a guy in the top five, right? The challenge from there is then adding complementary pieces and, you know, with superstars, with like not in Boston, but guys like Zion and New Orleans or other small markets. Once you take those guys, the clock starts to tick immediately on doing things to keep them in your market. So I think where Boston has faltered through their rebuilding comparison to Brooklyn is, A, they're not New York as much as Boston's a big market. They can't really open up two major cap spots and just think that Kyrie and Kevin Durant are going to walk in their door. But I think the struggles with the personalities and all the stuff behind the scenes that you mentioned at the top of all this, that's what plagued Boston here. It's been Tatum and Brown arriving ahead of schedule and kind of stepping on Kyrie's toes, and Marcus Smart, you know, his personality, as much as he is the fabric of that team, it doesn't rub everybody the right way. So I think it's been the retooling after the rebuilding that has been Boston's downfall, not necessarily that next Celtics trade.
Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher. He has written for every publication of note that's written about the NBA. I mean, this dude is the real deal. I love the grind. Built to Lose is the book. So an interesting time for the book to come out, mm-hmm. and it's excellent. And we'll see how the play-in tournament affects things and the new draft lottery odds affect things. But I can't remember a time, 43, a time in my lifetime, where so many games seem to matter and so few teams seem to be trying to lose games other than the Clippers. Nice job, Ty Lue. I mean, it's interesting. To what degree, how do you think tanking changes in the years ahead? And if it does change significantly, Jake, how do you think teams try to, as best they can, continue with an approach, if they're not going to have success in the short term, to acquire assets?
I don't think tanking will really change truly as long as they keep these lottery odds as they are. I mean, the book called How the Tanking Era Changed the League Forever, and it did in that the lottery odds, you know, they dropped from 25 at the worst teams. Now there's a flattening, and the bottom three teams all get a 14% chance, and it's also influenced this play-in tournament. But I think we're still going to see teams play the lottery odds. We see OKC and Houston and Detroit and Orlando. I mean, they all did whatever they could to get into, you know, the best lottery position they could this season, even with those lesser odds, because this 2021 class is considered to be the best class since that 14 class that all those guys we talked about at the top, Henke, Rob Hennigan, Danny Ainge, others were drafting for, because that 14 class was the best class since 03. Now, it'll be different when there isn't a Zion or an Embiid or Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley at the top, but I still think that there's benefits to playing this tanking game and playing the lottery. And I do worry, though, for those smaller market teams like Oklahoma City, if the league is going to continue to institute things in order to dissuade them from doing it even further. I wrote about it on Monday about how they're test running a G League midseason tournament next season, 21-22. That's going to be kind of like a start of season tournament, and they'll break the year into two kind of separate calendars. You know, the more they do that, like the smaller the sample size of actual games, you know, there's going to be less opportunities for teams to actually think they're out of the playoff bracket and out of the play-in conversation. But for smaller market teams who can't open up two cap spaces, like I said, and hope Kyrie and Kevin walk in the door, I think we're still going to see teams like the Thunder and the Rockets and Orlando play the lottery odds, because these guys mean more than anything in sports. Getting a superstar in basketball, it's more important even than landing a star quarterback in the NFL.
Jake Fisher here on the show. Jake, based on the I can't even imagine countless hours you spent on this book and the hundreds and hundreds of people you talked around the NBA, I'm curious the degree to which success in trying to get to the place people are trying to get in terms of finding that star through the draft, the percentage that is just drafting skill or drafting luck or just having, if you're Sam Presti, 4,000 picks in the next 5 years versus actual player development and the degree to which you think, based on your time on this book, that is you can have a real advantage in actually developing players in a way other teams can't.
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, from the top, from looking down at from the executive perch, I think being a successful general manager in the NBA is a lot about mitigating unforeseen variables. And, you know, when your guy is hurt and he falls, or someone trades ahead of you to draft your guy, how are you going to pivot successfully? But once you do land the player, if it does fall to luck, like there's some original reporting in the book, for example, where Devin Booker only falls to Phoenix at 13 because he refused to work out for Utah at 12 that year. So as much as the Jazz are here and they're, you know, a game up on Phoenix, that's a whole nother interesting monkey wrench and what if. But, you know, Phoenix gets Devin Booker, and they definitely had a coaching staff that grew him and molded him and helped him. And, you know, that Ryan McDonough front office ended up losing their jobs pretty much for their inability to pair Devin Booker with a point guard. But I think all the years they tried him out to be kind of a hybrid on-ball guy when he was scoring 70 points a game in Boston, you know, I think that helped him develop some pick-and-roll ball-handling chops and being able to penetrate like he's doing through this Lakers defense in the playoffs. So I think it's a whole mixed bag of everything you said. Like, you need to put in your work and prep and position yourself to get the guy. You do sometimes need a little bit of luck, like Embiid falling to three at Philly in 2014. Like, Cleveland and Milwaukee both had opportunities to take him, but their front offices just couldn't risk taking an injured big guy like that versus Hinkie, you know, had the timeline to do so. It really is all those factors, and that's why I do think it is so hard to get from the bottom back to the top. You need to just have a pretty clean run of good luck, and Philly's a perfect example too, where they had a lot of bad luck, and they're still here because of the work, I think, that coaching staff under Brett Brown and what the front office did under Hinkie and so forth.
Jake, and you just hit on it, I love it, the Sixers' willingness to lean into a longer timeline and the consequences that came with that, including the guy behind the process no longer being involved in any process of any significance in the NBA, led them to where they are today. It probably won't be a 7-year or 5-year plan, but when you look out at the teams that have tanked the last few years, that are trying to rebuild based on the things your book beautifully and brilliantly lays out, give me the most likely success story 3, 5, 6 years from now. Not everybody, but give one suffering fan base some hope that there will be a secondary process that will work for them.
I think if Minnesota keeps their pick here, I'm really bullish on what the Wolves are doing. I like the Thunder a lot too. I have a massive amount of respect for Sam Presti, and I think their new head coach did some good things, but the Wolves already have Karl Anthony Towns, who they tanked for during the book period when Kevin Love gives his trade request, and they sent him to Cleveland, and the Wolves fell down the standings and got the number one pick. So they've got Karl Anthony Towns, who the clock is running out on his time there, like we talked about, you know, building around these guys. His deal expires in 2024. But their number one pick from last year, Anthony Edwards, I think he's a real stud. He's not going to win Rookie of the Year behind LaMelo Ball. I think that's a mistake. I think what he's done under Chris Finch the last 2 months and the offensive creativity that Chris Finch brings to the game, I mean, he's the guy who really, when he was back as an assistant in Denver, you know, empowered Nikola Jokic to become the playmaker that he is right now. Jokic always had the skills, but Finch was the guy who really said, this guy's not a traditional big man. We have to put the ball in his hands in the perimeter and have him run DHOs and bring up the ball in transition. So I think they've got pieces. I think they've got a good coaching staff. I think they've got other guys like Malik Beasley and, you know, the McDaniels brother that they have. I always confuse the two. He's a long, athletic guy, and they had potentially another top five pick here. So I'm really bullish on the Wolves, and I think that they could be right back in the play-in tournament scenario next season if things break pretty well for them in the next, you know, 12 to 14 months.
Dude, great book, great interview. Love the conversation. And congratulations. I can't even imagine. So my two closest friends have each written books in the last year. Reed Forgrave wrote a book on concussions, and another friend of mine's writing a book on Elon Musk. And one of the two of them have had that moment where Reed has, not my other buddy, where the book comes and he opens the box, right? And was it relief or joy when you opened that baby and saw those books?
Definitely relief and joy combination, but yeah. Also, holy crap, now we got to go sell this thing. And I hope that, you know, the tree falling in the woods, I hope the book, you know, doesn't, I hope it falls in the woods and makes a sound type deal, you know? I didn't nail that metaphor, but you know what I'm saying. So
I like it. I'm the king of mixed metaphors. That was like an A- by the standards of this show. And if you are listening, help it make a sound. Built to Lose, Amazon bookstores, buy it. It is a great read. It is worth your time. Jake Fisher, congrats, brother. Let's do it again, man. Really enjoyed the talk.
Absolutely. Happy to come back anytime.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Robert Manfred is a really cool guy. He's a groovy cat, y'all. Raise the roof. Manfred, when he was trying to figure out, you know, Major League Baseball, I think new era, how, you know, these new caps are going to release for all these markets. I mean, Manfred really wanted to connect with the kids, so he showed up, you know, where some young people were and just started, he got down to this song.
Who let the dogs out?
Manfred! Yeah. Yeah.
How do you do, fellow kids?
Oh. Manfred's like, sup, y'all? Raise the roof, yo? Props to the mug. No, man. No, man. What are these hats? Here's the story. Major, I'm not making this up. How often do I talk about just the inability of Major League Baseball's leadership to even remotely sell a beautiful game in a competent way? Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do, see? We're going to make our product so uncool, none of the kids want to play it or watch it. Ah. Okay. Sounds great. Major League Baseball released a cap for every market. They don't make any sense. I went through as many as I could before I realized I was laughing so hard I was gonna Paul George myself. And I had to stop. Can someone in Atlanta tell me why there's an alien? I think there's an alien on the Braves hat. Is that just in anticipation of, you know, the report that's coming out? They have zip codes that don't make any sense. The Cubs have a shamrock on their head. Yeah, because there's only Irish people live in Chicago. Well done. You're right. There's no one else. It's not a big, beautiful, diverse city with full, you know, it's not the third most largest city in America that has people from all over the place. You're right. These are terrible. And they're so bad. They were so roundly mocked on Twitter. Robert Manfred and you know, the sports that he runs so got this wrong that, is it New Era who did this? Pulled the line down. Who let the dogs out? Who let the caps out in the world before they were vetted? What was the focus group? What's up, y'all? You like these groovy caps? Yeah. They so cool.
How do you do, fellow kids?
I was watching some TV on my DVD yesterday, on my VCR, and I thought, let's do some groovy hats. Right on. Yeah. I'm going to stop before I say something I shouldn't say. Bogus is shaking it. First time Bogus has ever agreed with anything that I've said. Did you guys go through these? I didn't even get to the Yankees. What the Yankees cap look like?
There was a pizza slice
on it. It looked like the Mets cap in darker blue.
Exactly.
The different NY logo, basically. I think they have like 90% of the same things patched on there.
They put a piece of pizza on the hat. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yep.
That's what I want, to walk around with a piece of pizza on my cap.
And a boom box?
No, they didn't.
100%. The New York hats have a boom box. The Red Sox have a lobster roll.
Oh, it's great. It's really, yeah, boombox. That's what all the kids are doing. I mean, I loved when I was in Brooklyn 2 years ago, when everybody walked around, the boomboxes on their shoulders, because that happened exactly zero times. I'm glad that at least Major League, look, give Major League Baseball some credit. It's not like they're based in New York and should have some semblance of what that market's like.
The repeat patches are the best one. Like, there's a 1776 patch on the Phillies and Nationals hats. The Phillies, it kind of makes sense. It's a little bit corny, but it kind of makes the Nationals and D.C., it doesn't historically make sense to have the year 1776 there at all.
I mean, we're just going to go. Why not just, like, have George Washington in a rowboat on a ramp, just, like, on a Cardinals hat? Like, what? I'm pretty sure he explored what became the Missouri Purchase, right? At some point, got driven back by the French when he was working for the British. Baseball. It's, you know, but that's good. Let's focus on caps that don't make any sense instead of promoting the game. It's a great idea. Boy, I wonder why Mike Trout a few years ago didn't want to promote himself. Manfred. I mean, what? How many did you buy? Bogus, did you buy like all of them? Did you buy like 15?
I tried to, but it was already gone.
You did?
I was slow.
You want one?
Of course not.
You want six?
You'll like this one. You know, there's area codes on these hats.
Yeah, local
area codes in the area. And they left off the actual Kansas City, Missouri area code on the Royals hat.
I know on the top of my head, there's no chance that they left off 816. Is that the number they left off?
They're all Kansas area codes. None of them are from Missouri. None of them are Kansas City. It's a complete and abject failure.
I didn't even know that one. I live in Kansas. What are the area codes on there? I used to live in Kansas City. My kids are born there.
I got them right in front of me.
I read it this morning.
316-620-785-913. There are four of them.
Yeah, 785 is like the rural Kansas. Oh, my God. That's like Lawrence, Manhattan, Kansas. So, like, for those of you who don't live there, and I didn't know, right, but, and I'm not disrespecting the Kansas side of the border. My kids are born on that side of the border. But Kansas City, people don't know this. It's always a giveaway, right? Oh, yeah, how's things in Kansas City? Love Kansas. I know the city name is Kansas City, but here's a little breaking news. Actually, in Missouri, there's a Kansas City, Kansas, and that is as much Kansas City as Hoboken is Manhattan. Like, not saying it's a bad place. There's a river, and you cross. Yeah, this is kind of a different deal. Kansas City, Missouri, where the Royals are actually based, right? Far east of the river, on the east side of Kansas City, in Lee Summit. They left 816 off. Oh, my God. I couldn't get, I got, I don't know how far I got. I got maybe 11 teams into the Caps, and I was like, it was so bad I had to stop. I almost pulled Paul George this morning.
The main patch on the Royals hat, by the way, is a saxophone.
You know, I believe the Blues Hall of Fame is there. I think that's what it is, or the Jazz Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I used to, yeah. By the way, they could have gone with some pulled pork, but it probably would have looked like, you know.
Nope, there's a pig.
Somebody threw up on the, there's a pig on
there. There's a pig on there, on the back.
Yeah, my dad's in the meatpacking business. I'm into that. I'll sign off on the pig. I'll go. Oink, oink. Let's go. Baseball. This is the only time we talk about baseball is when we're making fun of baseball. I try to talk about baseball. Do you think Robert Manfred, when he gets out of his massively expensive brownstone, I'm guessing the Upper East Side, and he gets into a chauffeured car, and then he gets driven to his ivory tower, where all the sycophants tell him how great he is. Do you think there's any point where he just looks out the window to catch a glimpse of the real world? So maybe in some small way, it could influence his attempts to navigate that world with the sport that he purportedly runs.
My assumption is there's like reverse tint on his car windows where he can't see out.
Yep.
He can see himself. Nothing.
He sees himself.
He just sees himself. He sees everything inside the car. That's fine. But he's not seeing the regular folks that he's driving by on the way to work.
God, you're sexy. Probably talks to himself. Manfred. You're the man, Fred. Yeah. We just cracked the freaking code. This is like, what's his name, running for the mayor of New York. I'm not even following that. I don't live there anymore. The dude that ran for president, whose favorite subway stop was Times Square.
Andrew Yang.
Why not just be like, you know what, to be honest, I'm a billionaire. I mean, I don't take the train. Times Square. What's your favorite part of New York? The homeless guy that peed on my shoe. No, it's not. No, it's not. And neither is Times Square. Incorrect. I mean, just own the fact that you don't. I love when people run for president and they get asked, they go to some small town in Iowa and someone asks, I love it. How much does a gallon of milk cost? Have you seen these? $15? 39 cents? Incorrect. Why don't we ask your butler? Why don't we ask him? I mean, man, oh my God. Hey, here's the prototype for the hats. Oh, this is perfect. He's like looking in the mirror, like he's not even looking at the hat. I love it. Sir? Oh, you're the man, Fred. What? Yeah, no, it's good. Send him out. Tell New Era we approve. You look good. All right. We called after a lot of people today because they needed it. They needed it. 785. No disrespect, rural Kansas. I love you. But you know and I know that is not an area code that relates to the Kansas City Royals. Come on.
How do you mess that up? I don't even understand. It's almost like they're trolling fans with this whole hat. If you're going to put area codes on, you got to put a half second of effort into it. You can't have a situation where there's no Missouri area code for the Kansas City Royals on the hat.
Tom, I hate to disagree with you on the radio, but, I mean, you're wrong because they haven't invented a thing yet. I mean, look, you'd be right if you could go on the internet and, like, I don't know, have a Schmoogle or a Toogle or a Hoogle or a Google. But like, this is hard. You have to get out a phone book and then you have to call the operator and hello, and the operator's busy and she tries to patch you through, but it, you know, can't get through. See, it's a storm.
You just got to pull your wire out and plug it into the other line.
we would have gotten it, see, but she's on a smoke break.
The number he was dialing began with letters. It was JK5.
He's got to crank the phone, you know, all the way around.
Yeah. Hurt my wrist, hello? See? You're the man, Fred. Put on some pizza. I think the people eat it. Bring me my caviar. Yeah. All right, baseball. Well, you continue to die your slow death. That's great. At the hands of you know, can we just please just draft Theo? There's no way. Can you imagine Theo's reaction? I think Theo would have announced that he's transitioning to basketball or football. I think if they just brought him into the meeting, I quit baseball.
He just needs like total veto power. That's what he needs. Like Theo just needs to be able to put the kibosh on anything that he sees fit. I think he would have gotten to this one.
Look, I'm a big believer in democracy, which is under threat all over the world, and I don't say this lightly, but the business world and sports world are not governments of the people. We need a totally bloodless, but a coup. We just need like someone to just like, you know, we need the chauffeur to just keep driving, you know? You know, with the tinted windows, Manfred won't notice. He'll be looking at himself just in the mirror. You look good. Yeah. And just drive him all the way to, I don't know, the Outer Banks in, you know, Virginia. And just when he gets there, they'll be like, this is the new office. Oh, really? And then, like, he walks into a house and there's all mirrors. And he doesn't even notice. He just looks at himself. And Theo runs the show. That's the plan.
You just kind of described the final scene in one of my favorite movies, super underrated Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks and Jude Law. I was going to get there. Hold on. First of all, I'm glad you saw it. Second of all, I was going to say, stopping shy of the murder part, he basically is in an empty house at the end of the world, just finally relaxing, and then he does die. So again, bloodless, no death, but yes, that house, in that situation, let's stick Manfred there while Theo runs baseball.
So instead of Road to Perdition, it would be like, I can't come up with it in time. Road to Abdication? Road to what a sensation to look at myself in the mirror? How about just the road to anywhere else but the head of Major League Baseball? Can someone clip this and send this to Manfred? But he won't have the time to listen to it because he'll have an intern do it, and they'll be so terrified. How was the segment about me on the radio, the most important medium in the world, huh? It was. Did they like what I do? They thought it was great. I knew it. I'm killing it. All right, tell Walter Cronkite to give me a call.
Send them hats.
let's get Cronkite a hat. Yeah, I haven't seen him in a minute. I think we go to the same club. Ah, bad friend. All right. Cool. Sounds great. What else we got?
We've got things sponsored by Credit Karma Money. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Anthony Davis said he'd be better in game two with the Suns, and he was.
Schroeder down the middle, kicks it to Anthony Davis. Three-pointer by AD. It's good. What a huge three by Anthony Davis to put the Lakers up six.
John Ireland on Lakers radio. Davis's shot so important because the Suns had erased a 15-point third-quarter hole.
We stayed poised. We stayed comfortable. We've been in that position before. You know, we didn't overreact. It's a team playing at home with a crowd. They're going to make shots. And, you know, we just make sure that we execute on the other end. And that we got stops when it matters.
LeBron hit his own big three late in that one for a 109-102 win. 23 points for him, 34 for Davis. Just 23 minutes for Chris Paul because of that shoulder injury. He finished the game on the bench. Luka Doncic scored 39. His Mavs won again at Staples, 127-121 over the Clippers. They take a 2-0 lead back to Dallas game three Friday. And the Nets up 2-0 on the Celtics after a 130-108 rout in Brooklyn. Steve Nash liked the jump his team made from game one to game two.
Obviously, we're a little sharper offensively tonight. The ball moved better. We had 31 assists and a lot of them early. So that was positive, you know, but it's about that time together on the floor, time together to understand and to gel and to make those connections that will afford us more, you know, down the
Kevin
line.
Kevin Durant scored 26, 20 from James Harden, 15 for Kyrie Irving, plus Joe Harris's playoff career high at 25 on 7 threes. TNT officially hiring Wayne Gretzky today as a studio analyst for its upcoming hockey coverage. Kenny Albert and Eddie Olczyk confirmed as the top pair in the booth. On ice last night, the Leafs took a 3-1 lead on the Canadiens with a 4-0 win in Montreal, and the Hurricanes outlasted the Predators 3-2 in OT for a 3-2 series lead. The Padres stole six bases in a 7-1 win in Milwaukee. The Dodgers pushed their win streak to 8-9-2 in Houston, and the Royals snapped the Rays' 11-game run 2-1. The 22 lawsuits against Texans QB Deshaun Watson now in the discovery phase. Watson will not be deposed until at least February, and lawyer Rusty Harden says they are not talking settlement with any of the accusers right now, so this a long way from over. And Turner just announcing its next made-for-TV golf event, Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady against Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers, Tuesday, July 6th at Moonlight Basin in Big Sky, Montana. Bill, back to you.
Is there any progress on Brooks Koepka and DeChambeau in a UFC cage match against each other? Because that's what
But I can only hope that Aaron Rodgers is on Team Koepka and somehow like gives DeChambeau a little shove in a hill somewhere in Montana.
It'd be amazing. God, Aaron Rodgers is definitely living his best life. I don't know if he's going to be living in Green Bay, but that guy's living the dream. Bogish, we took out several people today on the show. We really kind of...
We?
Yeah, I mean, you know, me and you were the one telling me to do it and brute me, you know, telling me basically this is what needs to happen. So when you apply for a job at, you know, MLB someday...
Right.
I want it to be on the record that it was you. No, I was.
It's a trap.
I'll own it. Yeah. It's a trap for Manfred. To be fair, you went to a whole different place with Road to Perdition. Like, you were.
That's fair. Listen, I'll eat the Manfred blame here, but I had nothing to do with Paul George and anybody else in hour number one.
Playoff PS Pants.
I just giggled.
You did giggle. You did giggle, but no one knew. Maybe it was somebody else giggling. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow on the show.
All right.
And Andrew Bogus on Twitter. We'll try to get nice. I don't really want to get nice. I just want to be honest. And sometimes honesty requires, you know, saying that Paul George is, Paul George and Robert Manfred is Robert Manfred. But we'll do some other stuff. We'll hit all the stuff we haven't talked about. An opinion on all that stuff. Buy or sell. It's amazing. It's edgy. It's next on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, I got one from John Hyland. He did his own buy or sell.
All right, I love it.
I'll read it and I'll give you his answer. All right, John Hyland. By the way, this is pretty self-serving for you and I, Tom, but I didn't write it. What a brilliant first hour. Praises CP3, soaks PG-13. And a PG-rated burn and drops a great Woj story. Hammer that. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, John.
Bye.
Hammer gets a double bye. I like that. Thank you for that. As you mentioned last hour, the fallout over Julio Jones' controversial Fox Sports 1 appearance continues as it has apparently thrown four parties, the NFL, the Falcons, Fox Sports, and Creative Arts Agency, into turmoil with each other. Legal ramifications are even possible. The new Falcons head coach, Arthur Smith, downplayed the entire thing when he spoke to the media yesterday.
We have great appreciation and respect for Julio, what he's done here, and for all the players that have been a part of this Falcons organization. Look, this is a tough business. We all signed up for players and coaches. We understand that. But everything we do here is going to be well thought out, and it's going to be handled behind the scenes with dignity. We encourage our guys. They should speak for themselves. I think that's the way it should be. So anytime a player wants to speak for himself, and that's anybody on this roster, they should. So that doesn't change anything.
Buy or sell the rookie head coach's approach in his response to this mess.
Buy it. I'm incredibly
impressed. Buy.
And look, putting together a plan, managing staffs, making sure that defensively and offensively you're doing the things you need to do, right? That's the deal. I get it. One press conference, one answer doesn't make a head coach, but it's a good start. You know, not as entertaining, but maybe more impressive than biting off some kneecaps. Ah! You know, like that's, you know, a little different than the approach up north a little bit. Yeah, that is a gracious and impressive response to a very difficult circumstance.
The cringe-inducing social media posts from Hawaii continues as Aaron Rodgers avoids Packers OTAs, but apparently he's not the only one. Green Bay's top five wide receivers also no-show the voluntary workouts. That includes Devontae Adams, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Alan Lazard, Devin Funchess, and Equanimeous St. Brown, leaving poor Jordan Love only scraps to throw to. Head coach Matt LaFleur said yesterday he isn't aware of any coordination on the part of Rodgers and his wide receivers, but that, quote, certainly, yeah, you'd love to have everyone here, end quote. Buy or sell the wide receiver no-show at Packers OTAs is directly related to the ongoing Aaron Rodgers drama.
Oh, 100%.
Buy.
And there's a few things going on. One is that the Players Association, the union, has asked players not to go to OTAs, and you can't do that if you're a rookie. I mean, you certainly can't do it if you're an undrafted dude trying to get a spot, land a spot, if you're, you know, you're Jordan Love. But there's, so that's some of it, right? They've been given permission and encouragement from the union side. But yeah, you're going to go as your quarterback goes, and if he doesn't show up, it's a lot easier not to, and guys would rather be in their version of Hawaii than doing OTAs. Tom, let me ask you a question, and you can be honest. I want you to be honest. Buy or sell my audible approach to describing biting kneecaps.
Buy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
Okay. Maybe it was a little like too squirrel. I didn't really get in there.
It's not as strong as the other takedowns and voices you've done on the show today, but I have no problem with it.
Oh, you mean Robert Manfred?
Yeah, see?
I'm real pretty, see?
Got him some caps, see?
Okay. It's too easy.
The NFL announced yesterday that for the first time, there will be a unified start to training camps this year. 29 teams will report on Tuesday, July 27th. That's 47 days before NFL Week 1 Sunday. The Cowboys, Steelers, and Bucks are the teams that have been cleared to report earlier than that due to the Hall of Fame game and or Thursday night football opener. Everyone else, though, will begin on the 27th. Buy or sell, there's still room for training camps to grow as a major fan event for the league.
I'm going to buy it. I normally would. I think that in everything, sports and beyond, I think, and I've talked to folks who work in various businesses that are sort of leaders of various ways to make a living in my community. I think people are bursting for experience and for connection and for activity and for travel and for things that happen that feel like the way that we want the world to be. And whether that's going to movies again or going to restaurants or traveling or doing a road trip or hanging out with friends, going to the beach with a bunch of people, literally shaking someone's hand, which I did for the first time in a year and a half the other day. It felt super weird, but the dude wanted to shake hands. And I'm like, let's go. Or going to OTAs and it feeling like a bigger deal because you get to be somewhere watching your team. Yeah, 100%.
As we mentioned, and it was no surprise, Julius Randle of the Knicks was named the NBA's most improved player yesterday, and he reflected very honestly about that accomplishment.
It's amazing. Yeah, I guess you really don't hear about a guy. I don't know the statistics or whatever it is, but a guy winning most improved in the seventh year. So for me, it's like a pretty cool thing because of I always feel like I get better every year. But to reach this type of accomplishment in my seventh year, where I guess people say by that time you are who you are, you're not going to get any better or whatever it is. Like, you know, there's kind of that stigma. Once you reach a certain point in your career. And for me, I never believe in that.
He doesn't have much time to enjoy the honor, though. The pressure is turned up to level 10 tonight as the Knicks face a critical game 2 against the Hawks at Madison Square Garden. The Knicks are slight 2-point favorites for this game. It is expected to be another grind. Buy or sell, Knicks-Hawks tonight is decided by one possession.
Great question. I'm going to be on CBS Sports HQ earlier, or later, not earlier. That would be time travel. I will be on later. For picks at 4 Eastern. They'll be on after the games, too. And I'm going to take the Hawks plus 2. I think the Hawks are going to win. Do I think it'll be one possession? I think it'll be close enough in the range. I think it'll feel like a one-possession game for the final 2 minutes, right? Whether the score ends
Bye.
6, right, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good. And by the way, like I said this earlier, I think the right thing to do is to always take the better team, which is usually the home team in the down 1-0 gambling sphere. But I don't think the Knicks are the better team.
We'll end with some quick Gretzky talk. As you heard, he has been pulled from his business side role with the Oilers front office to a $3 million a year Turner Sports contract. Interestingly, there are only 5 seasons in his NHL career where Gretzky made more than $3 million. Buy or sell, Gretzky's presence in studio will be enough to attract new viewers to the NHL on Turner Sports.
I'm going to sell that, but...
Sell!
Having seen this at FS1, right? They brought in a lot of great people. But I think having a great pre- and post-game show in the long run does that, and it retains the actual fans that you have. And I think you want to find superstar talent who are superstar broadcasters, and the only way to do that is hire superstar talent and just see if they can broadcast, right? See how good they're going to be in the long haul and how committed. So I like the move in a very, very serious way. Thank you to Jake Fisher. Built to Lose is the book. Check it out. Appreciate his time. He was great. First time I've talked to the guy. And I thought he was a really impressive dude, and I really enjoyed the interview. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. Thank you to Tom DiBenedetto. And thank you, especially to Paul George and Robert Manfred, for making this job so easy and so much fun. My name is Bill Ryder. This show is Ryder Than You. And we'll see you, we hope, back here tomorrow on CBS Sports Radio.